behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the podcast. I'm Scott Benjamin.
And I'm Ben Bolin.
Ben, we've got a really cool topic today to discuss. It comes from that book that we've gathered so many stories from in the past. It's that history, automotive history, mysteries, and myths, mythology, whatever. The Christmas gift book, you know, that's the one. We don't have the title of it right in front of us, but I'm sure, you know, frequent listeners will remember some of the stories that we told from there, the urban legends, things like that, right?
And this is a legendary topic itself, right?
This one's got a little bit of history to it. So, interesting one here. It's titled Thanks for the Great Getaway Cars, Henry. And here's the legend. I'll just read it straight from the book. Notorious bank robbers Clyde Barrow and John Dillinger wrote letters to Henry Ford thanking him for producing such fast, reliable automobiles that were often used to attempt to outrun police chasing them after various bank robberies in the early 1930s. So the legend is that these bank robbers write letters to Henry Ford and say, you know what, I really enjoy your product. Keep making them as fast as you can because, you know, they help me evade the police.
Yes, and we have an example of this. If we do a quick one here.
Yeah,
right?
Sure.
Okay. So let's see, Scott, you and I are pretty into this topic, so you probably know this. Our listeners might be interested to guess who may or may not have written the following letter. While I still have got breath in my lungs, I will tell you what a dandy car you make. I have drove Fords exclusively when I could get away with one. For sustained speed and freedom for trouble, the Ford has got every other car skinned, and even if my business hasn't been strictly legal, it don't hurt anything to tell you what a fine car you've got in the V8. Yours truly. Who wrote that one?
Well, I know who wrote that one. You want me to just...
Yeah.
All right, that was Clyde Barrow, right?
Mm-hmm.
Clyde Champion.
Champion.
He calls himself Clyde Champion Barrow in this one, which is another interesting little twist to this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now... The strange thing about that letter is, there's a lot of strange things about that letter.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, a bank robber writing the head of industry saying, you know, keep producing such great cars because we really like them a lot.
Yeah, and that's
I like stealing them.
Clyde Champion Barrow of Bonnie and Clyde.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's funny that he uses the word champion for his middle name.
That's so weird.
Started with C. His real name was Clyde Chestnut
mm-hmm.
Barrow. And
mm-hmm.
he went by Champion, I guess, occasionally. Now, one little interesting little fact is that he used Champion one time, I guess, when he was being booked into a Texas jail. And so he just kind of cheekily put that in, you know, as like a little kind of a personal joke on his part, right?
Yeah.
In this letter. Now, the letter is stamped as received by Henry Ford's secretary April 13th, 1934, and it was sent from Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Yeah, and it was postmarked, I think, or dated April 10th when it was sent.
Okay, so that's 3 days to travel from Tulsa, Oklahoma to Detroit, Michigan, or Dearborn, Michigan. The letter was kept at the Henry Ford Museum in Dearborn, Michigan. And it wasn't kept secret, really. The public knew about this letter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so Ford, you know, said, hey, we've got this letter. This is kind of strange. But you kind of have to understand, Ford never really said anything about the authenticity of this letter.
Right.
It's always been believed to be real. In fact, it is real, as we'll find out. But there were a couple of biographers that, you know, were kind of divided on the issue. They weren't quite sure about it. And one of the things that they pointed to was that it's most likely because they've done handwriting analysis, and there aren't a whole lot of samples from them.
Right.
But Bonnie, I guess, there were handwriting samples available.
Yeah, and that's Bonnie Parker. And just a quick fact so mm-hmm. people know, Bonnie and Clyde, their bank robbery spree went from 1932 till 1934. So this was written in the last year of their spree, which is also the year in which they died.
Yeah, very, very close to the end. And now through the handwriting samples, they've determined that the letter was likely penned by Bonnie,
mm-hmm.
probably, you know, dictated by Clyde, if you had to guess, because it sounded a lot like him, and adding the word Champion instead of Chestnut for his middle name,
mm-hmm.
Things like that. So, you know, it's likely that it's not Clyde's handwriting, but rather Bonnie's handwriting.
Mm-hmm.
And I mentioned just a second ago that, you know, you kind of have to understand what was going on at the time. Now, you said there's crime spree lasted from when, 1932?
To 34.
Okay, and this is April 13th, 1934, that was received. April 10th, it was written. The two of these cats, these characters, they were like a couple that was easy to romanticize, I guess, what they were doing.
Yep.
There was a real anti-government sentiment going on right now. This is a Depression era group that, you know, Bonnie and Clyde, who were, you know, driving across country, you know, making do as they made their way across the country by robbing gas stations, by robbing small grocery stores
and banks.
They're very, very overly romanticized, in my opinion, because the truth of the matter is these were pretty hardened criminals, really. I mean, honestly, I mean, when you look at their crimes, the crimes were robbery, of course, kidnapping, Ben, and murder. So, you know, these are not people that, you know, are just out to do good. And a lot of people give them this, kind of Robin Hood.
Exactly.
Moniker, saying that they stole from the rich and gave to the poor, but that's not the case.
Yeah, I think in the context of the time, we have to understand that the average American between 1932 and 1934 is probably anti-government, is probably feeling that the big banks and the large businesses are, you know, screwing over the common man, if we're being frank about it. So this sort of adds to their legend, but make no mistake, ladies and gentlemen, Bonnie and Clyde were not, you know, holding up evil fat cats and then giving the money to charity.
No, no, no. These are like mom and pop grocery stores, you know, in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of times things would go wrong. I guess Clyde was kind of a bumbling kind of guy, and things didn't quite go well. Now, they were young, too. I mean, Bonnie Elizabeth Parker was she's only 23 when she died in 34. And Clyde Chestnut Barrow was age 25. When he died. And again, that's in 1934. Now, they died famously in an ambush. You know, they used all this public, the momentum, I guess, of what they were doing to kind of become like folk heroes almost, really.
Sure,
at a certain point. And so they used this to their advantage. And finally, it all came crashing down on them. It was May 23rd, 1934. So that's just 6 weeks after the letter was initially penned. And that's when they were ambushed and shot by Texas officers and a couple of Louisiana police officers.
Because they were interstate criminals. But we should also point out that if we're going back to the letter, that Henry H.F. himself assumed this was real, right?
He
thought it was real, and he had his secretary reply.
Really?
Yeah, his secretary.
I didn't know there was a reply to this letter.
Well, just like a thank you note.
No kidding.
But it was from his secretary. It's not as if he wrote, "Hello, champ," or anything.
Yeah, I wonder how you send that.
Who sent in it? Care of General Delivery to Tulsa. But of course, they never got it because they're driving around on the spree, so they weren't in Tulsa at the time.
Okay, so they don't. They're not going to stay in one place for too long. Now, you know, can I just make one little note before we move on to the letter again? Because, you know. Covered him just a little bit here, but one kind of interesting fact that I read while I was going through this was that, you know, the car wreckage and, you know, you've seen the death scene photos, I'm sure, the Bonnie and Clyde car.
Grizzly.
Very grisly, yeah. And, I mean, just a hail of bullets and this thing is just riddled. It's like Swiss cheese, of course.
It really is.
Now the wreckage along with the bodies were towed into a town called Arcadia in Louisiana, and they were towed to this place that was a furniture store funeral parlor. So it's like this odd combination, and that's where they were embalmed, actually, is in this furniture store funeral parlor that's in Arcadia. Now, that's a small town for you in 1930s because what a weird combination of businesses. And I think there were a lot of these back then that, you know, they had these shared, you know, storefronts, I guess.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, it's carpentry.
I guess. I mean, it's really strange. What a weird mix.
I don't know if I would want to buy a sleeper set or something, knowing somebody was being embalmed in the next room.
I know. It's a strange combination. But anyways, I figured that was just a little side note that I'd mention here. So the letter, now we talked about how it was signed by Clyde Champion Barrow, right? And, you know, this whole thing with the Texas jail and, you know, there's a lot of grammatical errors in there and misspellings. And, as far as the experts go, they say that that probably matches his level of education or what they call lack of education in his case, because I don't think he went very far in school, if if at all, really.
Right. Like, strictly is misspelled.
Yeah.
They say ever instead of every. There are indications that you can find some fairly thorough analysis on with the letter.
Yeah. Now, but then again, this is kind of strange because if it's Bonnie's handwriting.
Right.
He was probably dictating to her, but she made the same grammatical errors as him. She didn't correct anything. She just wrote it as he read it, possibly.
Which is interesting.
Because she wrote a lot of poetry and things like that. So yeah. She probably had a firmer grasp on the English language and spelling and all that. Right?
She could probably spell strictly unless she was purposefully trying to be cute or unless the letter was fake.
Ah, see, now there could have been trying to throw them off just a bit by who wrote this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens. It happens often. You know, there's a lot of trying to disguise who wrote this. Now, this I don't know why you would disguise it though, because you're signing it, Clyde Champion Barrow.
Yeah. If anything, it might be that if this is real, which it seems that it is, there's a fairly good case that it's real.
Sure.
But if this is real, then it sounds as though it's something that they might have sent on a whim. Maybe some endorphin highs from their crime spree, and they're driving, they got away from somewhere, and Clyde's looking at Bonnie and saying, baby, this is a fantastic car.
You know what? It could have been because you've seen the photos of them, right? The press photos that were sent around that, you know, all the posing and everything with her holding him at shotgun and, you know, kind of, I guess cutesy type photos that were sent out, and this is part of what gained popularity for them.
Definitely.
And I think people really, for some reason, they just really latched onto this as a great story, and they were kind of following them all over the place. And they became, like I said, folk heroes, like celebrities almost.
Celebrities, really. Honestly.
Which is not so good for someone who's trying to rob places and make their way across the country doing so.
Yeah, if you're a criminal, I'm not accusing anyone in our audience of being involved with criminal activities, but you understand there's a certain advantage to being able to go incognito.
Sure, yeah, of course. Okay, so I mean, all in all, this is really pointing to the fact that this letter to Ford was authentic.
Yeah,
and that's the verdict that we'll find in our book. You know that it's determined to be that this after a lot of back and forth and investigating. That this letter to Ford from Clyde Barrow is authentic. It's a true letter.
The timeline works out. The handwriting, while it's interesting, and while there is a case to argue that Bonnie Parker wrote it, that is completely plausible. It is within the realm of possibility.
Okay. Now, we're going to move on to the letter that we promised from another gangster, John Dillinger. Also wrote a letter to Henry Ford. Now, this one, there's a twist. There's a big twist in this story. So pay attention for this one, okay? And it gets a little bit muddy here in the middle, but we'll try to figure it out.
Should we read the letter?
Yeah, you know what? I think that may be a good thing to do right now, but this, you gotta keep in mind that this arrived just 1 week after, the Bonnie and Clyde letter was received from Bonnie and Clyde, to Ford. So like 1 week later, he says, hey, guess what? I have another letter. Henry Ford announces to the public, I've got another letter from another gangster.
Uh-huh.
And this one is John Dillinger.
Ah, yes. Hello, old pal. Arrived here at 10 a.m. today. Would like to drop in and see you. You have a wonderful car. Been driving it for 3 weeks. It's a treat to drive one. Your slogan should be, drive a Ford and watch the other cars fall behind you. I can make any other car take a Ford's dust. Bye-bye. John Dillinger.
Okay. All right. So that's kind of funny, right?
It's cheeky. He's got a sense of humor.
It does sound – okay. Now, one thing that people will note right away is this sounds like an ad. It sounds like a brochure for Ford Motor Company, right?
It sure does, especially the part where they propose a slogan.
Very complimentary to Ford and his product. And, you know, it seems – a little bit suspicious, right? Now, I mean, the timing is just a little weird, you know, like 1 week later after all this is going on. Now, this is prior to Bonnie and Clyde's death still, because it was, 5 weeks later that happened. But, now this letter from Dillinger, when is it postmarked? I think it's postmarked, it's dated May 16th, 1934, so it's just after that, and it's postmarked from Detroit. And that's important in the story as well, as we'll find out. And, again, it's stamped received, and, there's the usual stuff that goes along with this, Ford announcing and got this letter, and we're going to post this somewhere and, you know, people can read. I don't know how they did it back then. I'm not sure where it was. It was a press release or in a newspaper ad or what. So again, it's very complimentary, the Ford product and the Ford company. However, it's considered a hoax. And, the reason it was, is because, you know, it just, well, the reason it was considered a hoax is because, mm-hmm. again, the flowery language.
Yeah.
And,
it's super complimentary. There are a lot of problems with it.
Okay.
Well, okay. For one, it comes from Detroit around that time.
Yes.
One little catch there, Scott. It's probably true that Dillinger was nowhere near Detroit at the time.
No.
In fact, he was likely with his buddies in Chicago.
Yeah, that's possibly true. Now, I was thinking it could have been, I was thinking Minnesota is like the more likely
where he would be.
Now, I'll tell you why in just a moment, but mm-hmm. there's something that clearly leads to this, right?
Yeah.
And now, okay, he's not in Detroit at the time, and that can be documented. I think a lot of people thought that he was involved in this bank robbery in Flint, is what they say.
Yeah, the Citizens Commercial Savings Bank.
In Flint, Michigan.
On the 18th of May, right?
Mm-hmm. But not likely true. Now, you know what? You're right, Ben. I'm sorry. At this time, Chicago, Illinois was the thought location of him at that particular time. The twist is where the other location comes up.
Go.
Now, I didn't give anything away there, so don't worry.
No spoilers.
No, but again, now this is a gangster. Mm-hmm. You read his letter, and again, it's almost like he works for Ford, right? So that's another thing that is kind of. I don't know, out of place in this situation.
It's a lot more like a prank or maybe a pre-internet version of trolling.
Yeah.
You know, what a lot of people would think, and rightly so,
I didn't mean to cut you off.
Oh, yeah. What a lot of people think, and rightly so, is that maybe this is from somebody who has a vested interest in Ford. Now, I'm not saying that Henry Ford knew that it was a hoax immediately. I'm not saying he perpetrated it.
Mm-hmm.
But, Scott, did somebody... Did someone who had something to gain?
There's more to this, Ben. There are more problems with this letter that, you know, is now considered to be a hoax.
Yeah.
The other problem is that, you know, he mentions in the letter that he drove the same car for 3 weeks. Not likely. The, you know, a gangster of that era mm-hmm. would stand out like a sore thumb in something, you know, they would be on the lookout for this. They would know who he was. You know, they'd have mugshots circulating of him. It's very, very unlikely that he would drive the same car, any car, for 3 weeks at a time.
You'd have to switch cars to avoid capture.
Very often they would switch cars. I mean, quickly. And they, you know, stolen cars. They would just exchange cars in a parking lot and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're
mm-hmm.
gone. The other thing is, now this is where it gets just a little bit strange. Now, the FBI, cause, you know, once something like this is announced, you know, once Henry says, you know, I've got this letter from John Dillinger, well, the FBI perks their ears up and says, we'd like to see that letter.
Yeah, let's check it for prints, right?
Yep. And you remember the director of the FBI at the time was J. Edgar Hoover.
Mm-hmm.
And he sent a note back to Ford saying that the prints were compared with file information on the Dillinger file and his associates, and said that, now this is confusing, no identifications were affected, which means it's not conclusive. The fingerprints that they found were likely to be from Ford employees.
Right. And this doesn't necessarily mean that they sent it. It could just be the prints that they left when they were handling the letter.
Yeah.
Upon receipt.
And the other thing about this fake letter, this hoax letter, is that the FBI report date, you know, the actual report itself.
Yeah.
Is 2 days prior to the received stamp from Henry Ford's secretary.
Yeah.
On the letter.
And it's funny because this was revealed in 1987 when a historian named Bill Burke investigated this for a little publication called The American Archivist.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a great classic line here. The FBI reports 2 days earlier than the letters received. Now that's efficiency or something.
Now, isn't that crazy? Now, no one spotted that for something like, well, what is that, 80 years? 75 years, something like that?
Yeah, it's amazing how long something can just sit in an archive somewhere. You know, God knows what other pieces of automotive history were missing, but yeah, so it wasn't until 1987 that someone said, hey, J. Edgar, How did you get that letter through time travel?
Yeah, that's really weird. Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? That no one noticed the date thing. I mean, it seems like such a simple thing right now. Like when we think back, like why didn't anybody check the date and find out that, you know, the FBI files 2 days prior? This can't possibly have happened. How in the heck did that happen? So here's where the twist comes in. And it comes to us via Jalopnik.
Our buddies at Jalopnik.
Yeah, they've done some great investigative work. Now, the guy's name is Matt Hardegree. Mm-hmm. From 2010. So this is a couple years ago, 3 years ago maybe. And he did some digging using the Freedom of Information Act, I guess, with digging up files on Henry IV. He looked at the FBI file.
I digress. Is it time for our big reveal?
I think it is. Now, this is the crazy twist in this whole story. Now, and I'll tell you why all this happens later, but there was we had talked about this hoax letter from Dillinger, right?
Right. Now, yeah. The earlier letter is the earlier letter from 34, I think May 16th, 34.
Yeah.
Pretty much a hoax.
Yeah, it's a hoax. And you know what? For a while, people thought, you know, this is kind of strange. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Ford had revealed this letter, and this is the public version of the letter, right?
Mm-hmm.
There was a real letter from Dillinger that was sent to Henry Ford.
Ah, and it was kind of a secret.
It was a big secret. No, it was one of kind of a secret. This is one that, like, and this is a letter, like, that Henry Ford held in his possession until his possessions were turned over to the archives.
Yeah.
And it wasn't treated all that well. I'll tell you that in just a minute. But, I mean, it was, it's like a secret letter, Ben, that was hidden from the public for, I think it's 76 years at this point.
Yeah, and the Jalopnik investigator only found it through the Freedom of Information Act.
Exactly. Now, this one predates the public letter by about a week, I think it is. As we go through here,
It's May 6th.
May 6th, 1934, rather. So it predates the public letter. And it has a much more solid historical backing, according to them. You know, this one is really authentic, and we'll find out why. Now, they discovered this letter in Henry Ford's FBI file, as we mentioned, which I'd love to get a peek at, by the way.
Oh, can you imagine?
Oh, I bet there's some amazing stuff. Now, there's a typed copy of this that you can read in that file. And the reason there's a typed copy is because the original copy, the handwritten copy, is destroyed.
Yeah, it's decayed. It's unreadable.
It's decayed. And, you know, the envelope, as a matter of fact, the envelope is there as well. And the only way that you can read the envelope is after they do something called infrared scanning of the envelope. It's in such deteriorated condition, you know, it's falling apart. That's the only way they can even determine, you know, what the writing is in the front of this thing. So it's an extremely fragile historical document.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this typed copy of this letter that they've got, again, from May 6, 1934. Ben, do you want to read it?
Yeah, let's go ahead and read it.
Okay.
Different tone here. Dear Mr. Ford, I want to thank you for building the Ford V8 as fast and as sturdy a car as you did. Otherwise, I would not have gotten away from the coppers in that Wisconsin-Minnesota, was that case?
Case.
Yours till I have the pleasure of seeing you, John Dillinger.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now, what's interesting about this is that, there's a lot interesting about
mm-hmm.
it, but the archive staff, the Ford archive people.
Yeah.
They didn't even know that they had this letter at first until Jalopnik contacted them.
Uh-huh.
Because they've got the original. And now he was reviewing the FBI file, which had a copy of this, a typed copy of it. Now he kind of, you know, was persistent about this, that, you know, you do have this letter, take a
mm-hmm.
look for it.
Mm-hmm.
They went and looked for it, and, the Henry Ford, museum people, the archive people, they confirmed that they do have this letter on hand now. So they have the original letter.
As unreadable and fragile as it is, the artifact remains. And also, what's interesting here is that this letter does something that archivists and historians love. It mentions a specific time
mm-hmm.
and a specific place.
Yeah, and the specific place and time really helps them out. Now, there's a lot of reasons why, we'll get into this, but why would Henry Ford distribute a fake letter when he had a real letter on hand.
Now,
now, one thing I want to point out, though, is that this letter, this is where I mentioned Minnesota before.
Yeah.
Why would he be in Minnesota at this time? Because we thought originally that he would be in Chicago, and that was at the time of the letter that was the fake, right? And that's
mm-hmm.
probably right, that he probably was. Now, at the time of the fake one, which is 10 days prior, he was in Minnesota, and they know that because his girlfriend, I guess, who was she was standing trial in St. Paul.
Oh yeah. We should can I do a little background?
Oh sure,
to build up to this.
Yeah.
I think it's important for us to note. things were touch and go in April for our buddy, Mr. Dillinger.
Mm-hmm.
In April 22nd, some people from the Department of Investigation were trying to trap him and his gang in Little Bohemia, Wisconsin. They got in a gunfight. People were killed, one mm-hmm. agent, one bystander, and then Dillinger escaped in a Ford Model A.
Mm-hmm.
And from there he goes. The next day he's on his way to meet his girlfriend, right?
Yeah, so he's his girlfriend is standing trial in St. Paul because she was accused of harboring him in Minneapolis apartment. So he's got this real strong incentive, as they say, to be somewhere near there at that time,
yeah.
Right? And I guess now this letter that's postmarked May 6th, I think it's postmarked from – it's postmarked from somewhere in Minnesota. Is that right?
Yeah, it's from – Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Okay, so that makes perfect sense, right? That's where their apartment
mm-hmm.
is. Now, the other thing is, now this letter, it arrived, this is another just weird timing thing, but the day after his girlfriend pleaded not guilty to the harboring charges, that's when it arrived. The true letter that we never really saw, that the public never
saw.
And the crazy thing about this is now they've done handwriting samples, to compare the way that Dillinger wrote in this letter that we haven't seen to the letter that, or known handwriting samples of his. And mm-hmm. the only other known handwriting samples were given under duress.
Right. So that would be some of his time in the lockup or something.
Yeah. And of course he's a known gangster. He's going to somehow alter his handwriting style in order to make it seem like, that any other correspondence or any other letters that were written by him or possibly not him, he's going to try to mess with them a little bit in this case.
Absolutely.
So they, of course, they're not going to match exactly, but they're going to be pretty close. And they also note that the paper used for this letter, this is interesting, is likely from a notepad that was commonly used at banks.
I admit, though, that's cool. That's kind of action movie cool.
Well, it kind of is. Now, of course, where is a bank robber going to get a notepad that's commonly used at banks, right? I mean, how hard is that for him to procure, as they say, right?
So what's the big question?
Well, the big question is, I mean, and this is the whole crux of the hoax, really, is that why would Ford fake a letter from Dillinger when he had a real letter that he could have easily, paraded out in front of the public and said, here's why, here's a letter from Dillinger.
Mm-hmm.
Look how fantastic this is. We've got two known criminals, that everybody loves, and they're saying what a great product Ford makes and how great the company is. Yet he fakes a letter, sends that one out to the public, and people say like, well, why would he do that? But yet the fake letter is the one that's still, displayed in the Ford archives as being the authentic Dillinger letter, according to them, and was later revealed as a hoax. So there's this weird thing, like why would Ford go to the effort of making a hoax a hoax letter when mm-hmm. he had a real one?
Well, there are a couple of, let's call them, compelling interests.
Mm-hmm.
How about that? Is
sure.
that fair?
Yeah, that's probably the best way to say it.
So we can see this when we compare the letters, right, Scott? We see that they're a very different style. They also mention some different things. The original letter, you'll notice, the real one,
mm-hmm.
Mentions that the Henry Ford cars helped him escape the police.
Yes. Now that's probably the biggest one in my opinion is that they want to tell the story of how Dillinger loves this car. They think that he thinks it's a great car, but he's also saying like, you're helping me break laws.
Yeah.
In a big way.
And let's not forget that the police at this time, major Ford clients.
Yeah, that's the problem. See, now that's the thing is that, Ford is trying to be, the ad agency guy here and saying, mm-hmm. We can't release this to the public because it's telling them that they can get away with something. My product is helping them get away with something from the police, and the police are a great big client of mine.
Right.
A lot of police are in Ford Cruisers at this point.
Yeah, so your Fords are so good that they're helping me escape your Fords.
Yeah, exactly. So, it's kind of an embarrassing letter for the police in that sense, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And Ford is really saying, let's get this out here, but let's take out that little embarrassing bit about the coppers. And the coppers are what, a lot of people at Ford, Ford Motor Company, often refer to as that Dillinger letter. They'll use that word, that verbiage will come up, that, the coppers part. And, even now, like, you know, people that had been around back then will refer to this letter, and they'll refer to it that way, and that's the authentic letter. Now, this is kind of strange, right? Because how do they even know about this thing? I mean, it's just this weird thing, Ben, like this hidden letter is so strange to me.
Yeah, and it must have been one of the secrets in the hallowed halls of Ford. There's a guy who has my nomination for this week's dream job, Ford historian Bob Krepke. Do you run into this guy? Yeah. And he's the one who mentions a lot of the stuff about the letter and the decisions to have a different letter. I do want to propose a second point here. In the hoax letter, I think they just went too far, man. I think putting in a slogan suggestion is a little bit too blunt.
Yeah, they pushed it just a little bit beyond where they should have, probably. It just didn't have that ring of authenticity, and I think a lot of people picked up on it, you know, over time. You know, they decided, that's not probably really authentic.
Especially in the wake of the Bonnie and Clyde letter. Yeah. I mean, how much more obvious could you be, right?
Yeah. And the weird thing again, I mean, well, I keep saying the weird thing, but there's so many different weird things about this. But, you know, when the second letter is finally revealed, the first letter, it kind of disappears. You know, it's like the original letter, I guess the original letter wasn't really that well stored. It says that it appears as if the letter had been kept folded horizontally and vertically for a long time, causing rigid creases and folds in the letter. There are tears and missing elements along the edges. The second letter, however, the fake, was well preserved. It was touted by Ford, you know, as in a press release. Oh, there you go, in a press release at the opening of the Ford Archives in 1953. And even now, Ford PR people refer to the fake Dillinger letter as the authentic Dillinger letter, not knowing that they had in their possession all along the authentic Dillinger letter, which was dated, a week prior to that.
Yeah, it's just
they
crazy.
They had no idea. I don't know how to get your head around this completely. You almost have to lay out a timeline for yourself, and you have to read the story through to really understand the dates and the timestamps and all that, because some of the timing is really weird between when the letters were sent from Dearborn to the FBI headquarters and back, and you know, when these things appeared and disappeared, and it's really, really kind of a shifty story. Now, just to, you know, of course, crime doesn't pay, Ben. So Dillinger, not much long afterwards, it was like, again,
6 weeks maybe?
I guess 6 weeks, yeah. After the letter was sent, that's when he was gunned down in Chicago. You know, he can't tell the true story of what happened. Ford had been promoting this fake letter for so long that people began to believe it was real. Even, you know, recently, their PR people, I mean, up until 2 years ago, Ben, the PR people were thinking that this was the authentic Dillinger letter, not knowing that the one that Dillinger had really written existed, but was never really shown to the public, which is a strange thing anyways. There's just a lot of really bizarre things happening around this.
Ah, but it does lead us inevitably to our verdict in the case of this hoax. Did bank robber Scott really write fan mail to Henry Ford?
Yes, they did.
They did not just one bank robber or one bank robbing duo, but another one. And the secret has finally come to light. You know what this makes me wonder? I wonder if other criminals have written to other companies. You know, did somebody ever write to GM, like a Mexican drug cartel, and say, thank you so much for your latest model?
I don't see why not. I don't see why it's not possible. I mean, the time was different back then, of course. You know, this is a pretty bold move on the part of these gangsters, you know.
Really thumbing their nose at the authorities is part of it.
All right, Ben. So this is a completely different era from the one we live in now. This is an extremely bold move on the part of these gangsters to write letters to, you know, the heads of industry and say, I really appreciate your product. I don't know if anybody now would do something similar in that, you know, there's way too many ways to trace these things. I mean, even fingerprint technology, they were scanning it for fingerprints and things like that, but they just really weren't at the level that we are now and being able to identify, you know, whether it's male DNA, female DNA on this thing.
Cameras on street corners.
I mean, looking at the back of stamps and trying to get DNA from that, and, you know, is there any kind of trace evidence on these things or where they came from, or, you know, even even video footage of someone mailing, you know, actually putting this letter in the mailbox, you know, if they know where it was sent from.
Yeah.
I just don't think that anybody could get away with something like this now.
And we don't think that you should rob banks. Even you guys, even if you think that you have a really good plan, just trust us on this one. It's a bad idea.
Great advice, Ben.
I think, you know what? Maybe I'm being too forward in saying that.
Can I make one? I just need to say this. I think before we wrap up here is that, you know, the Jalopnik team, in particular, the one who wrote this article, Matt Hardigree, did a fantastic job of laying this out in his article. And if you want to look that up and really read through this, because I think some of our, you know, it gets a little bit muddy in the way that we describe it. Because we can't go through this and read this article piece by piece, but it's called The Real History of John Dillinger and Henry Ford. And he does a great job of laying it out, a concise timeline that you'll really easily understand. Mm-hmm. And I hope we got just maybe your appetite whetted a little bit for something like this, you know, to look up the Clyde Barrow letter, look up the John Dillinger letters, and then, you know, kind of maybe do a little analysis yourself and, you know, look at the handwriting of the Bonnie and Clyde letter and see if it does match Bonnie's handwriting. You know, I kind of enjoy doing stuff like that.
Yes, and let us know what you think. That is an excellent piece of journalism. Scott, before we go, in lieu of listener mail, I'd like to read a tweet. Okay, this is just funny, and I promised the person who posted it, I promised them that we would read this on air.
Okay.
Okay, so Twitter, ZZ Coop writes to us regarding our hybrid episode, and he says, hybrids, I think Scott may have chlorophobia, an abnormal aversion to green.
Not bad.
I'm sure he's joking. That's a good buddy of ours, a fan of a lot of the shows here. ZZ Coop, thanks for writing, and we're men of our word. We did read it on air. That's
very
it.
Good, Ben. So you promised and you delivered.
Yep, and with that, that's totally not a hoax tweet, by the way. It does check out. I've got Top Men at the FBI on it. We're going to go ahead and head out here. What?
Are you sure you didn't receive a tweet 2 days prior that you maybe have covered up?
I can neither confirm nor deny your wild accusations. I can confirm that if people are interested in our Twitter, they can check us out with CarStuffHSW. You can also find us on Facebook. And hey, let us know what you think. We'd love to hear your ideas and suggestions for upcoming topics. Our email address is
carstuff@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.